This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger. Good morning to you and good morning, world, as we come together for our weekly get-together to talk about agriculture here on WGN Radio on the Saturday morning show. And as you heard earlier, we do have a busy show because I think it's 41 years now that I've traveled to Washington, D.C. at the end of the year to sit down with the current Secretary of Agriculture and look back and look ahead. And we're going to share that with you this morning with Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue. But before we get to that, in the second half hour of the show, we're going to talk markets this morning as well. Rich Feltus, who has been an analyst often quoted in Marketplace. He's now living in Nashville, Tennessee, but he's on the staff at R.J. O'Brien based in Chicago. And we're going to catch up with him this morning to look back at the market year just ending and maybe take a peek ahead to what we can expect price-wise in the upcoming year. So stay with us for that when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. We're going to have to make this happen more than once a year, so we'll start working on that in the new year, but it's a pleasure always to talk to Rich Feltus, the analyst and strategist and whatever else you can call him in the marketplace, who is with R.J. O'Brien based in Chicago. But Rich, we're talking to you this morning in where? Tennessee?
Yes, just out of Nashville, Tennessee.
And as we look back at the year just coming to an end, any major surprises? I guess that's pretty obvious, but what were the surprises for you?
Well, I think the degree to which in the middle of the year, I think July 6th marks the date when the U.S.-China trade war, exploded onto the scene. Trump, I think, taking on the Ronald Reagan mantra, if not now, when? If not me, who? In terms of addressing these long overdue abuses by China in trade. But the extent to which it impacted our ag markets was certainly a major surprise. And I would say secondary to that, Orion, was the degree to which Brazil, with their record soybean crop of last year, was able to step forward and meet a great deal of Chinese needs and continues to supply soybeans to China. We were a supplier of in the low 30 million tons beans to China the prior year. This year, even with these recent purchases now, it's still less than 3 million tons. So that's really been a major event in our marketplace. I think another surprise, Orion, in light of the 15 million ton reduction in last year's Russian wheat crop, is the extent to which the Russians have been able to continue to supply, be very aggressive, the low price supplier of wheat in the world. And again, last year's wheat crop down 15 million tons. I'm talking about the 17 crop. And their imports since the beginning of the marketing year, July 1, are actually higher than they were a year ago. I would say another surprise was the volatility that we had in the crude oil market. We had a $17 rally from Jan to the early Oct highs of about $77 a barrel, and then this plummet, a $32 break into our late December lows. That's certainly been an undertow to agriculture. It's been a drag on ethanol margins and actually paring back USDA's estimate of corn ethanol usage. And I think related to all of that, certainly the volatility in the Dow, this 27,000 early October high that has slipped to a 23,000 area in late December, a 15% break. We're now back, you know, a little bit of a rebound, a dead cat bounce to where we were in mid-October of 17. But in any event, the important thing here is this volatility in the crude market and the Dow, I think, has tended to push some investment capital to the sidelines, people just wanting to see things settle down and ease out before reengaging. And that, I think, has to some extent hurt the valuation of all commodity asset classes.
Well, a current situation beyond the trade wars, and I agree with you that how long could we do a $500 billion trade deficit with China? But now we've got the government shutdown in this country. Is that having an impact on markets?
Well, I think it to the extent that information is the grease that drives and lubricates the wheels of price discovery, I would say yes. Today we should have had export sales. This is on Friday. We're not going to receive those. We are also today supposed to have received the commitment of traders report from the CFTC. We will not be able to look at that data. And I think this regrettably has the unfair advantage of giving exporters, the people that are involved in the transaction of export sales, to have a little bit of one-upmanship in terms of market information. Recall the great Russian grain robbery ushered in the law that any sale over 100,000 tons has to be immediately reported to USDA and then relayed to the trade. Well, that whole information path has now been stopped up by the government shutdown. And importantly, for this upcoming January 11th crop report, which is so critical, it's the final take on last year's corn and bean yields, on what we're going to put out in winter wheat acreage, and what our first quarter usage was in corn and soybeans was. All that information, which I think may have been supportive to the market, is now going to be delayed till some further date. Just from all of the public information, it would seem as if this government shutdown is going to go well beyond the January 11th crop report. So I think it just makes it difficult to trade with confidence, and that, I think, also pushes players to the sidelines because the risk is just too high that when the plug is finally pulled and this information hits the market all in one gigantic splash, that will have volatility that is just, you know, more than some fund managers want to bear.
So let's talk about the best time to sell corn, soybeans, and wheat in the year coming to an end. What time period was best to sell those ag commodities, Rich?
Well, the high in the corn market, Orion, was late May. And then we had a prompt 80-cent plunge from June to mid-July. We rebounded somewhat since then, but certainly late May was the time to sell corn. In soybeans, we had a dollar rally from Jan to early March when we hit that $10.60 high in the front-end contract. And that was followed by a break in the soybean market of $1.50 into the early spring months. The best time to sell wheat, interestingly, was early July, and that was followed, Orion, by about $1.20 break into early August. So very much unlike your typical seasonal patterns in our ag markets, but very much influenced by the events in South America. Recall, Orion, that we had a decline in South American soybean production last year of 25 million tons. And in South America, though, despite the good crop we had in Brazil, the 18 million ton decline in last year's soybean crop in Argentina was enough to give this soybean market a real boost into the first quarter of the year, but then it quickly fizzled. Now, looking ahead to 2019, we'll talk about that in a minute. It's all going to depend in part on how the South American crops unfold and then how the U.S. crop growing season unfolds as well.
And, of course, you never fool with Mother Nature, but the hurricanes, the floods, and the wildfires, a long-term impact on crop production in the United States or not?
Well, interestingly, and it's great that you brought that up, because we did have a number of hits to crop production in the U.S. with the excessive late spring, early summer rains in the northwestern Corn Belt. We had dryness, as you know, through portions of Kansas, Missouri, parts of Michigan. In Orion, despite all that, the corn yield between the July and the November crop report inched higher and higher. It was up 5 bushels an acre through the season to a new record high, just short of 179 bushels per acre nationally. And the soybean yield between July and November went up 3 bushels to a new record high, 52.1 bushels per acre. And what a statement and a tribute to American agricultural productivity, to the new hybrids being brought online, always upgrading equipment, more ground being tiled, crops going in faster, being pulled out faster. Just amazing, the yield performance that we had. A number of states posting record yields in corn: Illinois, South Dakota, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Nebraska. And for soybeans, Nebraska, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, and Mississippi, all record yields. I think an impressive performance. And just a quick review of the weather. Although it was warmer than normal generally this summer, Orion, it wasn't hot enough to really pull these yields back. And in terms of precip, except for those areas that I mentioned previously, rainfall for the summer was generally normal to above normal. So overall, I would say an average to above average growing season, which, as I said, gave us new record high yields in corn and beans.
And then we've got about 2 minutes to talk probably about the most important thing on farmers' minds: what's going to happen with the grain market in 2019?
Well, here's what we can say with some confidence. Looking at the Palmer Index, the soil moisture base across the United States is certainly well above what it was a year ago, more favorable, so the soil reserves are good. We also know that the field prep, because of the late harvest in many areas, is behind normal. It's likely because of the corn-bean ratio that we're going to see more corn and fewer beans, more so in your fringe areas, the northwestern Corn Belt, than in your core center Midwest areas. Our commodity weather group team feels that we're going to have basically a normal to below normal situation on precip for the spring, but it's likely to be going to be a little cooler than normal. So we may have a little bit of delay in spring planting. It's likely that we're going to see a rebound in wheat production in both Russia and Australia. Those are two big export forces in the world, and that does not bode well for much recovery in the wheat market. Large banks and energy companies are optimistic that the whole recession fear thing has been misplaced. It's been overdone, that the crude market is going to rebound. That should be good not only for U.S. equities next year, but also for providing some support to the corn market. And finally, USDA, at least in their long-term projections from their baseline Orion, they're indicating that both corn and bean prices should be up from this current year in the new year because of declining carryovers. But my goodness, it all depends on the weather and what's going on in foreign weather as well. But I would say right now the markets have a fairly good base of support under them.
Always a pleasure, because I always learn something, Rich, and we'll do it more often than once a year in 2019, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely, and always great talking with you, Orion.
Rich Feltes, R.J. O'Brien, based in Chicago, but he's talking to us from Nashville, Tennessee. Always a pleasure to visit with him here on the Saturday Morning Show. 22 minutes after 5 o'clock on what sounds like not the best driving morning in the Chicagoland area. It's not snow or ice in Arizona, where we're working this morning, although the snow level got down to 4,000 feet. Above that is snow in the desert in Arizona. And we are talking freeze chances in the Valley of the Sun this morning and again tomorrow morning. Rich Feltes talked a little bit about the impact of the government shutdown on some vital reports that are due to come out. And Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue did outline the areas that will be shut down because of the government shutdown, and the USDA activities that will not be continued and will be shut down in an orderly fashion. Won't touch on all of the activities, but they include the provision of new rural development loans and grants for housing, community facilities, utilities, and businesses. All recreation sites across the United States National Forest System, unless they are operated by external parties under a recreational special use permit. Also, there will be no timber sales during the government shutdown, and most forest fuels reduction activities in and around communities will also be put on hold. Then, the NAS Statistics World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report and other agricultural, economic, and statistical reports and projections, they won't be happening. An investigation of packers and stockyards related to fraudulent and anti-competitive activities, assistance for the control of most plant and animal pests and diseases unless funded by cooperators or other non-appropriated sources. Those are just some of the activities that will be shut down during the government shutdown, according to Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue. And as I mentioned, during the second half hour this morning, we're going to share with you the interview with the Secretary that I did about a week ago in a quick one-day trip to Washington, D.C. to sit down with the Secretary. And he's going to be busy on the speaking circuit early in the new year. The American Farm Bureau Federation is holding its centennial convention, 100th convention, 100 years of the American Farm Bureau Federation, and Secretary of Agriculture Perdue will be featured speaker at the closing session of that convention on Monday, January 14th at 11:15 a.m. More than 6,000 farmers and ranchers will gather in New Orleans January 11 through 16 for the 100th annual convention. And the large family reunion type setting provides a platform for attendees to visit with one another, as well as talk to exhibitors and sponsors at the event. So I know a lot of you will be heading for New Orleans for the American Farm Bureau Convention. And interestingly enough, that is at the start of the new year, as we said, in the week of January 11 through 16. But then at the end of the month, beginning on January 31st, another farm group will be holding its big convention in New Orleans. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association will meet there. And last night at dinner, had the opportunity to talk with a former president of the NCBA, who is a rancher here in Arizona, Andy Grossetta, and he said it looks like there will be a good turnout of cattlemen coming into New Orleans at the end of January. So quite a bit going on quickly in the new year. Of course, wintertime, when farmers aren't producing crops, they're attending meetings to learn more about the technology that's going to be available to them in this crop year, and also to set policy for their organizations. That's what the Farm Bureau will be doing. That's what the cattlemen will be doing when they gather in New Orleans later this, or I should say in January, in the new year. We're not quite there yet, are we? No, we're not. But the New Year's Eve party will get underway early next week. Another China development, too, that I found interesting, because China has opened the door to imports of rice from the United States. The first time that has ever happened. And analysts took that step to signal maybe a further warming of relations between China and the United States. It was not immediately clear how much rice China, which sources rice imports from within Asia, might seek to buy from the United States. But the move, which comes after years of talks on the matter, follows pledges from China's Commerce Ministry of further U.S. trade openings earlier in the week. And then, of course, we have the trade delegation from the United States traveling to China the week of January 7 to do more than have telephone conversations. They're going to be face-to-face to talk with Chinese officials, and the delegation will be led by Deputy Trade Representative Jeffrey Gerrish and will include David Malpass, who is Treasury Undersecretary for International Affairs. So it probably won't get quite as much attention as the meeting between the Chinese and U.S. President in Buenos Aires, but it will get the attention of a lot of people to see if we're going to get further thawing of that trade war and the retaliatory tariffs because of that trade war. Well, the visit with Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue coming up, so stay with us for that in the second half of the Saturday morning show. And right now, we're going to take a break because it's news headlines time. And we're at, 27 minutes before 6 o'clock, an event that I look forward to every year, the opportunity to sit down with the current Secretary of Agriculture and talk about highlights of the year, lowlights of the year, and to look ahead to what we might expect in the new year. So we did that about a week ago, sitting down with Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, and we're going to share that conversation with you. Oh, incidentally, Samuelson says one time of the year that it does not run in the Saturday morning show. The Secretary says will be a part of the Saturday morning show where he talks about whatever he wants to talk about for the upcoming year. So we'll get to our first portion when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. Well, thank you very much, Max. And once again, this year, Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue has allowed us to turn his office at USDA in Washington into a television studio. Thank you for welcoming us back for this year's event, sir.
And we're delighted to have you back again, and I'm delighted to visit with you, Orrin.
First question I'm going to ask you, what is the most enjoyable thing you have done this year?
Well, since May of 17, I clicked off 48 states, and we've had a wonderful time visiting all over the country. The good news about that is east, west, north, and south, the production schemes may be somewhat different. The crops might be different, but the people are so much the same. It's a great constituency out there, and we're happy to serve the farmers. But one of the things that we enjoyed was taking a group of farmers and stakeholders to the New York Stock Exchange to ring the closing bell. And we had the opportunity to do that and demonstrate the importance of the agricultural economy to the U.S. economy and that icon of global commerce.
And in the last month of the year, everything happened in Washington involving agriculture.
Things have come together. Obviously, yeah. We had a very good vote on the farm bill. I think the highest vote total in the House that's ever been, a record. And certainly the agreement between Canada and Mexico and the U.S., the USMCA agreement. And we've got the Waters of the U.S. rule out now. So a lot of things happening in agriculture. We look forward to the second half of the mitigation payments there. And we look forward also with China coming back into the soybean market. We hope that can be an entree to restore the trades that we need without tariffs.
What are you hearing from all of the people involved in those trade negotiations that would be encouraging to producers?
Well, again, I think China made some commitments, but with the Chinese, it's never over till it's over. And I think, again, is this just a seasonal buy where they need us, or are they trying to make a good faith effort? That remains to be seen. I have heard that they're continuing to play footsie with the Brazilians and the new crop, and theirs coming on very, very soon. So we hope it's just not a matter of them running out of beans and needing us to fill in the meantime. We don't want to be the last date on the counter.
And you can't talk about China today without talking about African swine fever.
No question about it. It's a frightening disease, and it's ravaging the mainland China in so many ways. We keep up with it on a daily basis. Our Animal Plant Health Inspection Service surveys both in-country and with other data about where it's spreading and what they're acknowledging. Our concern is that we may not know all the news about that, but we are seeing them coming back into the market for pork purchases, which makes us think that there may have been some serious damage done to their pork industry.
And sort of in the shadow of all of the activity, but very important to farmers, WOTUS.
Oh, absolutely. That's a great victory there. Administrator Wheeler, Andrew Wheeler of EPA, has been a great partner with USDA. We work very well with him. But when you think about it, the interagency cooperation between the Corps of Engineers, the EPA, and USDA is unprecedented. And we're enjoying a wonderful interagency cooperation between those two because, as you know, EPA has a lot to do with our farmers' productivity, as does the Corps of Engineers.
And back to the Farm Bill for a moment. We got most of what we wanted in that bill, didn't we?
Most everything from the farm safety net. You know, the President and I were keen on the work requirements and our SNAP recipients and our food stamp program. And we think we can do some things regulatory-wise that will help that. But from the farm safety net, conservation titles, and others, I think it was, again, an evolutionary improvement over even the 14 Farm Bill. So we're very pleased.
And crop insurance, I heard more about that from farmers than almost any other title in the bill.
Well, it was crucial, and that was preserved. And good news, farmers participating in their own risk management, as you know, lenders and those who provide funds for the producers, the crop insurance is very critical in their financial and underwriting decisions.
Well, we just got the Farm Bill done, but now we'll start work on the next one. Do you see any requests that agriculture will be making in that one?
Don't move us too quickly, are we? We're going to implement this. Obviously, USDA has to write the rules of implementation. When Congress passes a bill, it's sort of generic, and we have to provide the specifics there. We have to change our IT structure and all of our farm service agencies. So we're going to be busy over the next couple of months with implementation. But the good news is farmers don't have to expect big changes. They're going to have more flexibility in the PLC, ARC decisions. They get to improve their annual production history and update that. So I think it's a lot of things they'll like. But we're going to be busy implementing this law.
We will continue our conversation, an annual event at the end of the year, with the 31st Secretary of Agriculture of the United States, Sonny Perdue, when we continue on This Week in Agribusiness. We continue our year-end conversation with Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue. And I'm going to begin because I learned early in this communications business, the important part of communicating is listening rather than talking. And you, I've sat in on a couple of your listening sessions. You're the best listener I've met.
Well, that's a compliment. You've seen a lot, but I love to get out among the community. I travel probably more than 40% of my time, but it's really important to get among constituents. Farmers are pretty much face-to-face people. They like to see you. They like for you to come to their town and their community. And we've had people come from all over the state when we go to a state, and we've been to 48 of them. So it's a real joy for me to get to. They are my people, and I identify with them, and I think it's authentic. I don't have to fake it. I can identify with their miseries, and I can celebrate in their joy over a good crop.
And I still get questions from farmers and ranchers saying, why do we have to put nutrition programs in the USDA budget?
Right.
Explain one more time why we do.
Well, again, I think the vote total that we just got in the House, not everyone lives in a rural district. And certainly if we did it strictly by where people live, the combination of our nutrition program and our farm programs work very well together, and we get a lot of urban and suburban votes from people who want those provisions, and we get a lot of farm votes for those people who live in rural agricultural districts. So it's a great thing to get to do together. Plus, it, you know, we're in the food business. Our producers produce food. These are consumers who are unable to provide for their families enough, and farmers are pretty generous, compassionate people. They want to help people. They also, they want to see people help themselves as well, and that's why the work requirements are really needed.
So as we look at the nutrition programs, I think they all started as a way to get rid of surplus farm products, and that has certainly changed now, hasn't it?
Well, it has. That we're going back to the 96 welfare reform bill when President Clinton was here, Speaker Gingrich was there, and it had a very good bipartisan agreement about welfare reform. What's happened in that period of time is that it had waivers when really there are tragedies or high unemployment. We want to have waivers there. The bad part about it, these waivers have been abused by states, and we want to rank them, kind of bring them back in to for the original meaning there of providing help for people, but not for it to become a lifestyle. We've got enough jobs out there today that we want people to be trained and move their families out of poverty, out of dependence, into an independent lifestyle.
The president has been a strong supporter of the biofuels industry. Mm-hmm. Is that strength continuing?
I think it has. I think it was evidenced this year by him agreeing to have EPA do the rule on E15 year-round. We think that'll be great for our corn industry and for our independent energy industry as well, and as well as consumers, to give consumers another choice and give the retailers an incentive to invest in year-round E15 pumps. So we're delighted about that. I think, again, in the Midwest and the corn-growing areas, it was very well received. But it'll be good overall for the corn growers.
I know you've had the opportunity to visit many of the hurricane-ravaged areas and the wildfire-ravaged areas. How serious is the aftermath of the flooding from the hurricanes? Or are we going to recover that farmland?
Well, we will, but it'll be sad for a while. The eastern part of North Carolina primarily, east of I-95, was flooded out. Their crops were lost, but when the rain recedes, they will be able to recover and hopefully have, you know, our farmers are optimistic, have a better year in 2019. We're doing, from a disaster program, hopefully if Congress is able to allow us to do what we did in 17, can help them as well. That was Hurricane Florence. Hurricane Michael came through the panhandle in Florida, and much of the damage there was timber and pecan trees and certainly some cotton. There were instances, Orin, where a farmer had harvested a portion of his cotton field and went back after the hurricane. You couldn't tell where he had harvested and where not. Yeah. Just blown away. So the wildfires we're visiting in California, we hope good forest health and good forest management will help us keep those under control.
You think we'll be able to get new rules on forest management through?
Well, we were hoping we could get in the farm bill. We were not successful there, but they were able to give us some new authorities back in the spring, and we're going to exercise those and optimize those abilities to manage our forest in a healthy way that we're better at recreation, better wildlife, better water quality, and certainly better economy for the harvest. It's a crop, as you know, like other crops, just has a longer growing cycle.
Certainly does. Well, we have a lot more to talk about. Our year-end visit with the Secretary of Agriculture of the United States, and we'll continue with Secretary Sonny Perdue after this on This Week in Agribusiness. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue is the 31st Secretary of Agriculture of the United States, but I was just sharing with you that our first Secretary, Jeremiah Rusk, R-U-S-K, came from Vernon County, Wisconsin,
wow,
where I grew up.
Oh, good. That's a hometown, right?
That's the hometown.
Yeah.
Yes, and we did spend a Christmas holiday with
wonderful
the family there. So
that's great.
Anything else about those listening sessions that you learned that maybe surprised you?
Well, I don't know that surprised me. What I heard reinforced time after time, obviously the trade situation. Yeah. We want to get that resolved as quickly as possible. I was so proud of our agricultural community and our producers, though, of supporting President Trump for long game. You know, farming's a long game. It's not a one shot. It's a year after year after year. And farmers have the opportunity to look over the horizon. And they understand that's what President Trump's doing with where China has been abusing the marketplace, particularly intellectual property and other things there. They gave him the benefit of the doubt in that way. Hopefully we can make some progress. Hopefully China means what they say, and they want to have some structural reform in that area. So that's it. Obviously, we need a legal, reliable agricultural workforce. Labor is the other issue. We hear it everywhere. And we need a bill that will allow us to have a legal agricultural workforce there. And hopefully we can get that in 19. We had a good bill with Chairman Goodlatte, and we weren't able to get a vote this year. But I'm hoping we have a comprehensive immigration solution that deals with our agricultural workforce as well. And then again, we continue to make headway on regulation, as we indicated, the waters of the U.S., again, working with EPA and the Corps of Engineers, and there are others we're unwinding as we go forth, trying to remove that oppressive blanket of regulatory effect that farmers have to deal with.
People often ask me, how much personal involvement is there with the Secretary and the Chairman of the Senate and House Agriculture Committees, and how much interaction do you have with the President?
Well, a good bit of both on both points. We try to stay in touch with both the chairs and the ranking members on the House and the Senate, and really be available. I'm a three-branch kind of guy when it comes to government. I think there's a legislative branch. Congress needs to do its job. In the Farm Bill, proposal was to provide them all the technical information. It was not our job to write the Farm Bill,
right,
but to give them information, data, and intended consequences, unintended consequences of what they were considering. We gave over 2,000 pieces of technical assistance to Congress from USDA this year, and they were very grateful. We got good reports from their members there. The President, it's kind of funny how a guy from Queens loves farmers so much. He literally does. And he calls me sometimes at different times of day and night and says, are we taking care of the farmers, Sonny? And he means that. I was in his office Friday, and he asked me again, are we taking care of our farmers? And I said, we're doing exactly what you promised, Mr. President.
And you've had the opportunity rather recently to meet with some agricultural officials from Mexico.
We did. We had breakfast this morning with the new administration, the Secretary of Agriculture there, as well as the Undersecretary. These are gifted men trained academically in the sciences of agriculture and biotechnology, and I think it'll be a great partnership. One of the agreements of the USMCA, the new NAFTA agreement, deals with biotechnology. We talked about, frankly, the Western Hemisphere coming together and promoting biotechnical issues. You know, the Europeans have sort of put the brakes on that, and we don't think we're going to be able to feed the world without the new technology that's coming along, and they embrace that. We're real champions of that, and the Canadians are as well. So we think we'll have a great North America agreement confederation over those types of issues.
European Union still a challenge?
It is a challenge. It's almost a technology-free zone. And it's sad to have a continent there that has a fear of food. And, you know, I believe we've got some of the safest, most nutritious, healthiest, and the most affordable food in the world, and we have had. But the Internet, as good as it is, creates a lot of misinformation sometimes. And we've got people here developing a fear of food, and that's unfortunate.
The thing that scares me about social media is anybody can put anything on there. Somebody will read it and somebody will believe it.
Unlike you, you have to be accountable for your opinions there as you broadcast, and you can be held accountable. But anyone can go on, as you said, and it doesn't have to be true.
Well, we're going to change the name of Samuelson Says again, as we always do at the end of the year. It's going to be The Secretary Says. Mm-hmm. And when we continue from the office of the Secretary of Agriculture in Washington, D.C., we're going to turn it over to Secretary Perdue. And the Secretary says, well, the one time of the year that you don't have to put up with my biases and prejudices and personal opinions is this show that we do in the office of the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue. So, Mr. Secretary, it's your turn to handle Secretary Says.
Now they get to hear my biases, right? Well, thank you, Orrin, and it's great at this time of year as we celebrate the holidays, and I'm delighted to be in this job. It's a real honor to serve the American citizens and American agriculture here as the Secretary of Agriculture. As I've traveled to 48 states since May of last year, I've found delightful friends all over the country, and we're welcomed everywhere. And it's wonderful to see even the different production techniques everywhere, but the people are so much the same. These people embody the American spirit and their work ethic, their family values, and their heart for one another, their compassion, and their environmental concern. So it's really a great constituency. There's not another job I would like to have in the United States government other than this one. It's also a delight to work for President Trump, who has a heart and affinity for American farmers as well. And he asked me on many occasions, Sonny, are we taking care of our farmers? And he means it. So the other thing is the interagency efforts that we've done. You mentioned the Waters of the U.S., and we talked about that, where the EPA has agreed to redefine what we mean there into reasonable common sense standards, not a mud puddle or not a little ditch that's always dry. But this will be huge and relieve farmers of the fear of the confiscatory action of the federal government in that way. So we're delighted to have the relationship with the Corps of Engineers, the EPA, Department of Labor as well. And so I just want to tell you what a joy it is to have this job. I'm honored to represent agriculture here in Congress and on the Hill and to the President.
And I hope you had a holiday season filled with family and good times.
We do indeed, with 14 grandchildren.
14?
Yes.
Oh, and I have to ask you one more question.
Yes.
You were in the Air Force. Did you fly a plane?
I did fly a plane, but not militarily. I'm a private pilot and enjoy both rotary and fixed wing.
Well, I share that with you because I have a Cessna 210,
yes,
so
I
share that feeling with you. Can't thank you enough, sir, for continuing the tradition of the year-end interview with yours truly, and I look forward to doing it again next year.
Wouldn't miss it.
Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue joining us on This Week in Agribusiness. It happens every week at this time. We run out of time on the Saturday morning show. I do want to thank our engineers, Bob Ferguson and Ben Cortez, for helping me put it all together. Thank you for listening. And this is the last show of 2018, but we'll be back here on 2019 a week from today on the Saturday morning show. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 7:20 on 7:20 WGN Chicago.
Orrin Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orrin and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.